Welcome to this session of Conversations with Drs. Dean Busby and Shalom Levitt, where we will talk about sexual intimacy within marriage.
Welcome. We have Dean Busby here, Dr. Busby, who also teaches the healthy sexuality class here on campus. And today we're going to talk about just kind of an introductory sort of topic that is really covering the idea about why we need to ground sex within a marriage and the family. So what do you think about that? I mean, just initial impressions right off.
Question. I mean, it as you ask it, I thought back to myself when I first started my career about 30 years ago, that question would have been absurd.
Right.
It's like the idea that it's not about
what else?
what else? And so the fact that it's shifted to a point where we have to actually move the conversation into the direction of having it be focused on marriage and family says something about the dramatic movement that we've had around sexuality in this country and in the world in some regards. So I think that what that means to me is that it's turned from a thing that was about forming marriage and forming families to an appetite that may or may not have anything to do with marriage and family. And for me, it personally, why I feel like that context is important is because I think that speaks to the way we are, what sexuality means to us. Mm-hmm. If I think of it as just an appetite, then people are just objects for satisfying my appetite.
Yeah.
If I think about it as part of a decision about what my relationship means, that it's a committed relationship and that it's a formation of a family, and sexuality is not about an appetite at all. It's about, it's a symbol of love and it's a symbol of commitment. And it's a way for me to make meaning out of this behavior. Of course, there's appetitive natures to sexuality, but I'm not ignoring those. But so you know, in one regard, you're making a pretty big statement about how you feel about sexuality if you take it out of those relational contexts. Seeing that it's just an appetite.
Yeah. And I guess I'd just reiterate that, you know, both you and I are religious, you know, and certainly that's within, you know, kind of our value system. So that is absolutely how we talk about it. But not just because we're religious. I think the research also supports this idea that that's going to be the place where you will most often or most likely have your needs met, especially women. You know, I think we see that when we talk about the orgasm gap and how women struggle oftentimes to feel sexual pleasure or satisfaction. Oftentimes it's because we are in this kind of rotating partners situation. That's what we're talking about when we talk about sexuality. And so when we talk about it and we couch it in the context of a marriage and a family, I think that actually we have to acknowledge that's the place where both partners will most likely have their needs met.
Yeah, I like that word flourish. I think that's the context wherein which sexuality can flourish the most. When you have that sort of context around your sexual behaviors, then you're able to be vulnerable and you're able to grow together in ways that I don't think you can with casual relationships. I mean, a couple of things are coming to mind just as you talk there. I remembered when I first published that study on the influence of sexual timing in marriage way back in 2010, I got so many interview requests around the world. It astonished me. Everybody wanted to talk about this novel finding. And for me, it was always a sort of obvious thing, right?
Interesting.
That if you start out your relationship with sex, it's probably going to complicate things.
All right.
Anyway, it was just so obvious to me, but I hadn't seen anything written on it recently. So it's time to publish something.
Yeah.
So then all of this attention came. And in the midst of that, two really sort of powerful experiences happened. One was this disc jockey, radio personality in California, a very famous guy. I won't mention his name, but he called me, wanted to know about all this new findings and sort of, you know, he's challenged me at first, like, you know, why does it matter? So, you know, and then, but then he said, you know what, now that we're talking together, when I finally got to the point where I wanted to get married, I did something very different with the woman I eventually married. I didn't want to be sexual with her from the beginning. I wanted to wait.
Yeah.
I wanted to sort of let that build and see. And so so he says, you're right. There was something about when I was thinking about this as part of a relationship, I wanted the timing to be different. Mm-hmm. And it meant something different to me. So it was just like striking. See, he still had it in there. This was a guy who had been a proponent of casual sex and all kinds of things that in many ways I think are sort of the opposite of how I think about sexuality. And there he was, his own personal choice was still there.
Yeah.
And then the other one was this guy that was just really pounding on me. He was just going, he was just really trying to tell me that I was suggesting a thing that was going to ruin a lot of people's lives and they're going to miss out on all this fun and stuff. And then somewhere in that conversation, I says, I hear what you're saying. And I sure, if people try to play sexuality only in a committed relationship, there are some things that they will not experience in life. I hear you. But one of the things that seems so difficult for me to understand is how do you trust somebody to be in and with your body in that way when you don't know them? How can you experience sexuality in the rich way that it can, can be? And when you don't even have enough confidence in them that if you left your houseplant with them, they wouldn't kill it. I mean, how can you do that? He says, well, good point, but it's still fun. Anyway, it's just this sort of this realization that I guess you can just sort of move it over here to this playful thing. You could play tennis with somebody you didn't know, and big deal.
Yeah.
That you can put it in that place and you can have some fun with it, but you have to close off this vulnerable part of yourself.
Yeah. And I guess I mean, because of the research, I would challenge even that idea that you can just have fun with it. Can you really? I mean, because we know that especially women who are engaging in just casual sex have, you know, heightened depression and all sorts of consequences. So, I mean, I think that it's just one of these myths that we've bought into as a whole culture and we promote and people just kind of believe it. And when we talk about the study that you just mentioned, when we talk about that in class, I ask students to kind of think about why might it be that we see all these better outcomes for people who waited? And it's interesting because, you know, we throw out a number of reasons why it might be, but what it always comes down to is because we've given space for our relationship to grow emotionally without complicating it or replacing that with just sex, with just the physical part of it.
Yeah.
That really we're just having a different focus on what the stages of the relationship are. Let's be a friend, let's be friends and emotional and vulnerable that way first. So, and then we'll add this in once there's a little more commitment in the relationship, which really provides, you know, more safety. I mean, if I look at it from a feminist perspective, I think that even from a feminist perspective, I would say, yeah, that's the best place for you to have sex is in this relationship where there's some commitment, some staying power for certainly if pregnancy result is a result of sex or, you know, whatever, just emotions that are the result of sex. There's going to be somebody there for you.
Yeah, I remembered in the Me Too movement when it began, I was so hopeful that it was going to change our conversations, not only to recognizing how awful these the misuse of power for sex was and how often that it was, that we were going to also then start asking ourselves some questions about what is the climate around sexuality in our country where we're actually making ourselves more vulnerable.
Yeah.
What are the things that we're doing that are contributing to higher risk factors of being harassed and abused and being in relationships with people that aren't healthy by choosing to have sexuality be the beginning of a relationship rather than, you know, only after we feel like it's a pretty comfortable place. And it really hasn't shifted that way.
No.
I mean, I even thought it would challenge some of the stuff with porn, that people would start saying, is there a way that porn is contributing to this, the reason we have culture. So many, this culture where, you know, people are just objects to abuse and violate and drop. I really haven't seen that either. And so in terms of the causes of why is sexual harassment and abuse so prevalent? What are the ways that people are starting to think and feel about sexuality that are contributing to that. I don't think we've gone there. We've just talked mostly about, you know, holding people responsible who have been abused, which of course is important, mm-hmm. but there's so much more we could do to provide a better environment.
Yeah, there's some real contributing factors that we haven't addressed that contribute to a lot of these terrible outcomes, you know, terrible attitudes towards sexuality and how it's used. When you were talking, what came to mind is that marriage is the perfect environment for us to feel a little pressure to change, right? To actually mm-hmm. examine ourselves. And I think that that doesn't happen in casual relationships, mm-hmm. right? So it doesn't matter if, you know, the sexual experience didn't go super well for one partner or the other, because you're just going to move on to a new partner. But if it doesn't go well within a marriage, you actually have to like examine that mm-hmm. and maybe make some adjustments yourself or communicate about that
crucible idea that Sam talks about, that because you're in this relationship that you've decided to make it a lifetime commitment, then there's this energy that comes to it that you can't just let these problems sit if you care. You know, you're gonna dig back in and say, so we're having kind of boring sex as an example.
Yes.
And yeah, you're right. If it's just like, you know, a friends with benefits thing, we'll move on to a different friend and forget about it. But if it's a spouse thing, I say, well, we need to work with this. We need to talk about this. We need to deal with this. And then I think you can grow in ways you could never grow in a casual relationship. You have to face some things about yourself and your relationship and figure it out. For me, when I have challenges in an area and I work at it and I improve, the richness of that area in my life is so much more than if I haven't put in the effort to grow.
Yeah.
And so I think that means sexuality can be so much richer experience, I think, in many ways.
Yeah. And I mean, you think of couples who like go through something hard, whether it's, okay, let's face the fact that we have really monotonous sex, or maybe there's been a hurt, you know, something just wasn't handled right. And once they like go through that struggle to figure out what it is within their relationship, might be them, it might be the partner, a combination of how you interact, they feel closer to each other. Mm-hmm. There's this sweetness that comes from making that struggle. And then what's kind of fun is that sex takes on a whole new meaning and, you know, can be a different experience after a growth period like that.
Yeah, I agree. The other thing about that question you asked, the original question, is it's within the context of marriage and family. Mm. You know, I think that we have been teaching for years that sexuality is both about bonding and it's about reproduction.
Yeah.
And of course, the idea that in religions you only think about sex as a reproductive act has been a destructive mm-hmm. way that people have used their religion, that, you know, you're not about, it's just about kids.
Yeah, it's really lopsided.
Yeah. And so, but I think we're pretty much beyond that in the sense of I don't really know hardly any religious people that think that way about sex anymore, that's just about reproduction. They understand it's more than that. And so then the question becomes, just like we've answered it about how does it change the meaning and potential of sexuality when you are engaging in it with the purposes of family formation, not just mm-hmm. marriage formation? This incredible act of love is at least at one level designed to create another life that we raise together and all that kind of stuff. There is, just think about the power that could have to make sexuality have a whole nother layer to it. And so, you know, how does a child feel differently when they're raised in a home where they feel like, literally, they came about because of the love parents shared with one another, mm-hmm. physically and emotionally, that I am a result of love of two other people versus, you know, I was an accident.
Yeah.
And or something like that. So it just feels like it starts out the family in this really potentially powerful place with regard to sexuality, that sexuality is this sort of foundational thing that can build loving family relationships. And we don't talk about that much anymore. It's not really, we primarily think about sexuality as a couple adult thing. We don't talk about it in a familial way.
Yeah.
But I think we've lost some of that, and we ought to ponder that a little bit.
Yeah, I like that thought. And, you know, I think to go along with that, this idea that this relationship between spouses creates another relationship as a parent and a child. And like you're saying, if it's talked about in terms of this all occurred because of love, mm-hmm. You know, that gives even a sweetness to the relationship between the parent and child that we may not always talk about, you know, mm-hmm. just like you're saying. I think that's really nice. It's about creating relationships, stronger relationships, and relationships kind of grounded in love. Okay, so another question. What does marriage add to sex that casual relationships don't?
Yeah, we certainly have touched on that. And I liked your ideas about growth potential. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think another element that we also mentioned a little, but it comes back to like a kissing study we did, that a significant number of people who are being sexual with somebody don't feel comfortable kissing them. And they say specifically because kissing is too vulnerable. Isn't that astonishing?
Yeah.
That face-to-face thing with kissing is too intense for them, but they can take their clothes off and be
sexual. Says a lot about how they're having sex,
yes,
too.
You're right, it does. But think about what that means in terms of vulnerability.
Yeah.
It's saying, okay, so then if you say, let's create a context like marriage where hopefully you're comfortable being as vulnerable as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Vulnerability to me is this mechanism for turning sexuality from something that is playful and fun, which is important part of sexuality, mm-hmm. to something that can be, you know, what happens when you're vulnerable? You put your heart out there on the table.
Yeah.
And somebody that you love can help you grow and face challenges and, you know, all the things that vulnerability can do and cement that relationship. So I think vulnerability is the key there. And marriage, boy, if you're working at marriage, you can't help but be vulnerable.
Yeah, I like that. I guess I was also thinking that in a marriage relationship, if you're just engaging in casual sex, then you can just worry about your own pleasure, right? It's a pretty one-dimensional experience. Just worry about what you get out of it. And then, you know, you move on, or, you know, maybe even in short-term relationships, you don't have to get too deep about what the other person is experiencing. Mm-hmm. But in marriage, hopefully you're invested in that other person's experience mm-hmm. as well. So you're taking a completely different perspective on sex. You're focusing on that other person. You know, what are their hormones doing to them? Mm-hmm. What's their emotional experience during sex? And yeah, and what's the quality of the relationship outside of that? So there's a completely, you know, it kind of multiplies how you look at sex, that I'm not only just concerned about my experience, I'm now concerned about my spouse's experience and how we seem to fit together, how we interact with each other.
Yeah, so the power of it in our relationship. And then as you talked, I start thinking too, what she's saying is that in some ways, when you're married in this committed relationship, then sexuality at times can be about a gift. And when we give gifts, something we already do individually because we enjoy, mm-hmm. it can have such a more rich experience. You can't always just do something like sexuality because you're giving to somebody else. But I do think that side of things is really potentially one of the richest ways you can experience something. I think of anything we can give as a gift in life. And it's great to experience it individually, but then as soon as you give to somebody else, then there's this level of satisfaction and connection, appreciation that can come to an experience because you're freely giving it to somebody you care about. And so, you know, how do you do that with somebody you don't even know what they want for a gift?
Right.
You know, but it's sort of like when you give a bunch of gifts to people that you don't know very well, you just kind of give them all the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? You know, but when there's somebody you really care a lot about, you put some time and effort mm-hmm. and you think, what is really going to make that person, you know, what is something that can make them happy, you know, just have a smile on their face, and you put way more effort into the type. And that's what I think happens with sexuality.
Yeah. And I think an example of that might be when you know your spouse really needs sex to, you know, connect or, you know, to relieve some stress or whatever the reason is, but you're not really into it. You're not feeling it that night, but you go ahead, right? Mm-hmm. You make that sacrifice. And that is a really tender experience you're not at all concerned about or even necessarily wanting that physical pleasure for yourself, but you realize that there is a gift, right? A give and take that needs to occur. All right. Why does media promote the idea that the best sex is the hookup culture? I mean, that's everywhere.
It is. It's in a lot of, I remember when I read that question, thinking about all the different ways you see that message sent.
Yeah.
For one thing, I think one of the most entertaining parts of relationship is that new energy, that erotic interest and attraction and everything. And of course, sex sells too.
Yes.
And so think about how boring it would be to do a long-term marriage kind of program and they just date for a long time.
Right.
And, in contrast to super attracted to somebody, and are they going to be sexual or not? And how much are we going to see, this they tie into sort of the tawdry issues of sex. It's and it's faster. It fits the sitcom kind of thing. And so there's a wide variety of sort of the temporary culture we have, the throwaway culture we have. And of course, we have to ask ourselves, are the people that are entertaining us, are they living lifestyles where sexuality is much more about an appetite and personal pleasure? And then they can only show us what they know. And I don't know. I mean, often it could be that that's just the lifestyles that they're living.
It's interesting that you say that because whenever we talk about the idea that married couples have the most satisfying sex, that always surprises my students. I don't know if you have had that same experience, but it's like, really? Because they've been surrounded by this culture that says, yeah, once you get married, you got that ball and chain and it's not going to be exciting sex. And, I think there's some truth to the fact that it's not as exciting as that first experience like you're talking about or those first few experiences, but it's much more satisfying. It's much more vulnerable. It's much more growth oriented. So I think people are truthfully they feel more satisfaction in the experience than these, flash in the pan, hot sex that is so promoted.
Yeah. And I think that surprise that students have is often because they've heard these statistics that say, number one, a lot of relationships divorce. And so they think, well, it must go negative.
Yeah.
And then of course the regular findings that sexual and relationship satisfaction tend to have a slight downward curve on average over time. The strange thing is that's true for any relationship. It's not unique to marriage. And it's probably true. I don't know this, but I would guess it's true for anything we do regularly that with somebody else, that at some point it gets this sort of, loses some of its creative energy that it has in the beginning. You have to work with that. And so on average, a slight downward slope may just be the nature of humanity across time, but they misinterpret that to mean that means committed married sex
is boring.
Yeah. And it's not the same variable. It's just,
And I think as some researchers have teased out even groups within that trend that actually there are some that it increases. So I think it depends on what you think about sex, what effort you put into your relationship.
Yes. And of course, those statistics always have the 40% of marriages or so that are not going to make it.
Right.
And so they're going to have a steep downward trend early on versus those that stay together and then don't have a downward trend at all. But on average, you would have a slight downward trend. So you're right. There's very unique trajectories. But I don't know. It may also have, I think it's partially too, that when we think about married people, students in particular think about their parents.
Yeah.
They don't want to think about their parents being sexual.
Right.
And so that's just not to think about them having good sex even is worse.
They can't be enjoying it, yeah, if they are doing it.
And so we're tapping, yeah, into that
too. Yeah, that's true. Well, and I one other idea that came to my mind is just a thought that a number of researchers have promoted, that there really is no such thing as casual sex.
Yeah.
I mean, we want to say that, oh yeah, casual sex is, you know, the most fun, just like all the things we've described. But in truth, that really isn't the case, that you are making a connection with that person. Your body responds in a way that even if you, you know, never see that person again, mm-hmm, you feel some sort of connection. And so there's some sort of loss, mm-hmm, each time.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's an important thing for us to talk about and remember.
And there's been a variety of evolutionary psychologists who have tried to argue for years that we're inherently non-monogamous, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But the data are really the opposite.
Yeah.
We're pretty monogamous, pretty consistently monogamous, that we're happier, healthier. That's who we are. That's what we are made up from evolutionarily, biologically. That's who we are. And so we're working against everything when we decide sexuality isn't embedded in these relationships, mm-hmm, working against our bodies, our evolution, the meaning that we need in life. You know, humans are complex because we can make meaning out of things. Animals, yeah, do what animals do, right? Yeah, but we have to think about it, and we have to, what does this mean? Where am I going? What's, mm-hmm, life about? So we ask these big questions, and everything we do, we fit into those big questions. So in order to have sex with people you don't know, you have to say, I'm not going to think about what it means.
Right.
I'm not going to ponder whether I feel connected or not. I'm just going to cut off all these parts of myself. So it starts to feel like that word we use in the book a lot is fragmented. It just feels so fragmented. This little tiny piece, you take it out and separate it. And certainly that means that the value of that experience will be fragmented as well.
Yeah. And it really is like the opposite of being mindful about sex. It's having casual sex is not as intentional. You know, it's happenstance and whoever I happen to hook up with. And again, it doesn't create this space for vulnerability, for really showing my complete soul, you know. And we do have to kind of move into this cut off response and just focus on the physical.
Yeah. I like, as you were talking about casual, I think you're right. That term is just not a good term.
Yeah.
It doesn't match anything. There is no such thing as casual sex. I think I like Mark's term for cheap sex better, because you take it into like the things I purchase. I buy a cheap thing. It breaks. It doesn't last. Right. It's worthless. And I spend some effort and get a quality thing and it's not going to hit. But cheap is something quick and not very, it doesn't have the power to work and last over time. And we don't put much into cheap, you know. And so it's maybe a better
I like word. That. Yeah. So it kind of brings us to this question. How do you respond to the idea? And I would even say the myth that men want freedom and women want relationships. You know, that seems to be kind of an idea that lots of people promote, that men are kind of, you know, getting harnessed when they get married, and then they're not going to really live their, you know, free life anymore.
I'd say immature boys at the most want to do whatever they want and not have any consequences and just pleasure centered, you know, that as they're growing and maturing and trying to learn to care about people. Men to me, that's the most jarring piece of that statement to me. They're not men.
Yeah. Okay.
Men are not people that can casually throw people away, that can do things to people that are hurtful and that, you know, they don't care about people. I think it takes maturity and it takes effort to, you know, be an adult.
Yeah.
And men or women. So I mean, think girls and boys maybe. you know, that they might feel harnessed or trapped by a relationship because they're immature.
Yeah.
They're not ready to be adults. And once you become an adult, you decide, you know, I'm gonna hopefully treat people with respect and love, and I want to get the same in return. Those are the kind of people I want to be with. I don't want to just look for a momentary pleasure kind of thing. So that's how I often respond. I don't think you're talking about men when you're saying those things. You're talking about, you know, immature kids.
Yeah.
And if so, of course, if there's people who are immature and you provide a context for them, they can get whatever they want without much effort and cost. Much consequences. There's a subgroup that are going to just be really happy about that setup. Mm-hmm. And they're going to struggle with something that challenges that setup.
Yeah. I would just add to that, that I just think it sells men short. I don't think that most men, I mean, well, especially how you define it, right? Boys, yes, but mature adults, they want to have that responsibility and that long-term connection with a person. And I read some research that said, if you dig down to some of these ideas that promote this this notion that men just want lots of partners.
Yeah.
Really what they've done is taken some of these extreme answers that some immature boys have given that, yeah, I want 1,000 partners. Mm-hmm. When the majority of men say, I want one partner. Mm-hmm. I want to invest in this, and just like women do. So yeah, we do have these extremes of a small group of men who may say, I want lots and lots of partners. But I think most men want to make that sacrifice and commitment that a relationship requires. And then they want to reap the benefits of it, just like women do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking of Julie's research on loneliness, and that one of the biggest plagues of our modern society is so much loneliness. Mm-hmm. And what is the loneliness coming from? It's people who are not connecting to other people, staying connected, working over time to keep connected in those relationships. And so, you know, we just fundamentally need a pretty deep level connection to feel healthy and be happy. And so, as you say, there, who are these men that don't need this? The other day I heard the craziest thing I heard, in the sense that, remember Wilt Chamberlain? He was this famous athlete. Yeah. Said this, I'd had, you know, 100,000 partners, I mean, thousands of partners.
Ridiculous.
But he made a statement later. It said this very thing we're talking about. He said, I would give all of that up for a meaningful relationship. Yeah. And then, for, you know, and it's so much better. And I think he'd actually had one at this point. He sort of settled in and had a meaningful, and that this was just so much better than all of that other. He'd give all that up for what he had in terms of.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
And so, you know, even these examples we have out there of these, you know, these men that are having all this casual sex and having so much fun, what they're looking for is that connection. And we know this in anything we look at. Like if you have a problem with chemical addictions, if you have a problem with overdoing things in life, that it's because you got these gaps in here you're trying to fill with things that can't fill them. You know, they're trying to do these addictive kind of behaviors to try to fill in this loneliness that you feel, and it doesn't work. And so then you get more and more desperate.
Yeah. The only thing to fill it is connection, a relationship with other people.
Hard work. And it must get harder and harder to get that when you get so much baggage.
One thing though that it generally comes up in my class is that women, you know, they've heard this message and they're like, well, you know, men are just after one thing. And I think it does such a disservice to the majority of men who are not after just one thing. They're after the same thing that most women are after, right? They're wanting to figure out, how do I do the work to have a meaningful relationship? And unfortunately, that's where most of us are really lacking. Mm-hmm. We don't know how to do the work to have a meaningful relationship.
Yeah. And so clearly some people are saying that because they feel like either they've been in a relationship with somebody who it felt like they were objectified, or they know other people and that has felt like part of the reality. So we have to attend to that. But it's like you said, why does you have to separate out your body and your spirit to say something like that. You have to say that, in fact, I remember a woman saying, sometimes I think my husband only loves me for my body. And I said, are you your body? I mean, I just asked, is your body like not you? What are you talking about? Try to understand. Yeah. And of course she said, no, I mean, I just think sometimes it's just about the sex. Mm-hmm. So we went down that road and said, what it sounds to me like you're separating them out. Maybe he is as well. And maybe you're separating out because he does. So I certainly can understand that must be painful. Yeah. But maybe you're part of the challenge here, that you're making that separation. Because I would guess for a lot of men, their avenue towards a connection may be more physical. I mean, we know this about fathers, right?
Yeah.
They often start with a playful kind of thing with kids and they have a little game or something.
Yeah.
They're more prone to do that through some kind of physical activity. And then they build, and they might have a talk after their son.
I like that.
And so, some men may start with wanting to feel connected to their spouse, and they naturally move to the physical first. And then let's hope that they and their spouses make sure that it moves into not exclusively about a physical experience, that it's richer than that.
Yeah. And I think that's one place where we can challenge, you know, wives, women to say, well, so challenge your spouse. If that's where you feel like things always just focus on the physical, challenge that a little in your relationship and challenge yourself. Maybe you're the one who's kind of interpreting it that way. And yet there is a little emotional connection along the way that you're not seeing.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Dean.
You're welcome.
That's it for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Sexual Mindfulness Project and subscribe to our website, shalomlevitt.com, to stay up to date with the latest information on sexual mindfulness. Thanks for listening.